Nice.
Yeah.
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Video games. Welcome once again to Filthy Casuals, a podcast about video games hosted by three very kind and extremely knowledgeable boys. Thank you very much for joining us. My name is Tommy Dasilo, and with me as always...
It's Ben Vanel here. I just noticed the first place thing on your Zoom screen. And let me say congratulations. Knox,
thank you.
Adam Knox is also here with us, and he has not placed.
I'm not participating in this Zoom filter bullshit. I don't think it'll catch on. I think everyone will get sick of them by around April of last year. And then you'll look like a real ridiculous idiot if you turn on your Zoom call for the first time in a while and you've still got the Seinfeld background behind you, because that's how you left it set in November.
Yeah.
We're back.
Tommy, you're a prize idiot. That's what that means.
Tell you what, mate, to talk about a bloody ribbon, Ben just gave you a bloody ribbing.
Yeah, it doesn't.
Just the fact that we're on Zoom doesn't mean the banter has to stop.
Yep.
Well, I was playing around with the filters before we started the episode, and I felt like, you know, we're back on Zoom for the first time in a while. Have a bit of fun in the window, and funnily enough, the first place ribbon felt like the least obnoxious one that I could find. It was this or... being a little pig or having a little fake mask on over the picture of me, or having some ski goggles on. I don't know, the little first place ribbon is just up there in the corner hanging out. It's not really getting in the way. It's just something
interesting
I can look at and remind myself that I'm doing a good fucking job.
Right.
Coming back to Zoom after mercifully not having to have used it for a few months there, the stuff they've added is really like, because Ben, you blurred your background before.
Yep.
Which, like, I like that the things they've added are either for people to be like, oh, God, my house is embarrassing. No one look at my house. My house is embarrassing. Or like you use, Tommy, oh, God, my personality is embarrassing. Please let me show everyone that my personality.
Yeah, you can use a filter to blur your background so people can't see the anime body pillow. Or you can use a filter to add an anime body pillow into your Zoom window. It's fantastic.
Right. It's Zoom has decided that that's the two genders. It's like, I'm embarrassed about my surroundings, or I'm an extrovert. I just want to let everyone know that I'm a bit out of the box.
I'm an extrovert.
Funny hat that's on my head, but it's not a real hat.
Am I an extrovert or am I a unicorn? Wow! Look at that spike. We're in lockdown in Melbourne again. If anyone doesn't know, we've got. Where the vaccinations are happening very, very slowly here. So we're back in lockdown. Mm. And I feel like this, I'm not adjusted to the delays of the call again now. It's already fucking with my head. You guys aren't ready to jump in when I've clearly finished a sentence again yet.
It seemed like there was going to be more to the thought, and I hate to use this phrase, but triggered from the months and months of talking over each other over Zoom calls that it is. Yeah, it's very hard to get back into the rhythm because when you do a podcast in real life, it's very different. And so what happens over the Zoom call is that the talking over each other happens a few seconds later than it would normally when you're in the same room. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, or you just be really polite and don't jump in over each other, and it works out fine. You do have to have something interesting to say, though, which is proving difficult for me today, having had no human contact for an entire week. But fuck.
And you didn't even know we were in lockdown!
Yes.
Yeah, because I've been self-isolating for years.
Yeah, it is very annoying, and but whatever, it's the way it is. And so if the recording reflects that, guess what? Fuck off.
Yep. Have a bit of compassion.
And look, yeah, if you're in a position in whatever part of the world you're in where you can get vaccinated, go and get fucking vaccinated. Yep. Do the right thing.
I reckon I could pass for over 40 here, right? They're giving vaccinations to over 40s. I just got to walk up and be like, I tried to book in, but I can't use my phone. Be like, yeah, come this way, sir, please.
Yeah.
Well, I found out that I am eligible, which I found out via someone DMing me, a stranger DMing me on Instagram to tell me and say that, hey, you know, because you had a terminal illness at one point, you qualify now, you can get it. It's interesting that information came to me via an Instagram DM and not from my fucking GP who has my entire medical history on file. So, yeah, that was cool way to find that out. So there you go. But
I'm nearly – if I were to go a little crazy with the burgers for a couple of weeks, I could get it by being dangerously overweight. But currently I'm just hilariously overweight. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Right.
You're early John Candy, not late John Candy.
Yeah.
You can get it for like issues to do with like severe mental health problems and things like that too. So anybody who's listened to this intro of this podcast is now eligible. So congratulations.
Also, this counts as proof that we're eligible.
And participated in it.
Yes.
Yeah. Do you mind, do you feel like disclosing, or it's fine if you don't want to say, but how much would you have to put on in order to be in that category?
You have to have a BMI of like more than 40. It's not to do with weight, it's to do with BMI. Okay. Which I saw some shitty TikTok. I joined TikTok. I'm mainly getting like conspiracy theory videos because that's like the genre that I'm kind of hate watching. So I'm seeing a lot of TikTok flat earthers and things like that, and like spider TikTok. It's made me, the algorithm is good. It knows what I'm watching, but I am watching stuff that's not good for me. And that has made me think about what my habits are. But anyway, I saw some video that was like, did you know that the BMI was invented by like a Nazi eugenicist or something like that? So I'm having a bad time this lockdown is what I'm saying.
My YouTube algorithms just sends me walking tours of Japanese towns. And that's great, honestly. It's the way I've been relaxing.
My YouTube algorithm gets me. It's either like mashup songs or like short videos of like someone falling over or whatever. Right. I basically got funniest home videos and I'm switching between that and like if Weird Al programmed MTV.
That's okay. All right.
And I dare make fun of someone for employing a Zoom filter with an algorithm that like that. Do you know how many fucking flat earthers there are? There's a ton.
Yeah, that's
they're a lot more sincere about it than I assumed as well. Go on TikTok and accidentally. Irving.
That's the thing. Like a few big, high profile people. I think it's Kyrie Irving, the basketball player. Flat earthers, right. And it's like, okay, well, everyone under a certain age who's a big fan of them is just going to immediately be like, well, okay, mate, this must be real then. This must be true.
It's crazy. Right, like there's a strange number of people who genuinely seem to believe it. And I don't think the last year of having to be stuck inside has helped when people forget what the horizon looks like. So maybe that's why it's kicked off a bit. But TikTok's a nightmare is the ultimate point.
I'm too stupid and impressionable. Like I worry if I look at any of that stuff, even like hate watching it for 5 seconds, there'll be a big part of me that's like, yeah, I see where they're coming from. I could see myself really easily getting sucked into that sort of stuff.
I honestly think this is good for me because I do think there's a certain amount of me that is a little bit contrarian, and so seeing people say the wrong things makes me believe the right things more.
Right. You're the opposite of like the alt-right YouTube rabbit hole. Like the more Joe Rogan you watch, the better, more balanced and empathetic a person you become.
Literally, yeah. If I read 12 Rules for Life, I'll be like, you know what? Women should get paid more.
well, fuck, that's how we've been dealing with, this new lockdown.
We did a bit of YouTube watching and Zoom recording over the weekend. We watched some gameplay videos that had come up in the last couple of days. There was a Sony State of Play last Friday where they devoted, what was it, about 20 minutes to Horizon Forbidden West. Horizon Zero Dawn 2, : Forbidden West.
Yeah.
We also, so on our YouTube channel right now, you can watch a video that is that and Dying Light 2 and Far Cry 6 with our thoughts over the top of it, us kind of riffing over the gameplay videos. But those three have been revealed in the last week. Horizon Forbidden West looking really beautiful. All the particle effects and stuff. I think we're all pretty impressed with that. None of us really blown away by the original, but it seems like I kind of was thinking maybe I should go back and actually do the original in advance of the sequel coming out. But the more I think about it, the more I think maybe I'm probably better just skipping straight to the sequel because they may have tightened up some of those little things that made it not quite stick out heaps at the time.
There's a lot of story stuff towards the back end of the first one that I think is worth even just looking up on YouTube or whatever. But I did enjoy that stuff. Like, out of that game, the thing I enjoyed the most was kind of the fun, cyber future, post-apocalypse. When the story took its turn into exploring what had happened in the past to make the present the way it is in that game, that was fun. It was well done.
It's also, probably better to just watch it because if you play that entire game in the lead up to 2, you're going to be sick of that sort of style because it's not a groundbreaking open world game. It's just a good open world game. So you might get tired of that.
2 looks like it's doing exactly what the first one did, but with a couple of extra bits and pieces here and there. So, hang out.
Yeah.
And you know what? You'll have plenty of time to play it though if you do want it, because they're saying they didn't give a release date in this, and it was kind of like implied earlier on maybe last year that it was going to be 2021, but I really think that might not be the case now, because like they just finally said the God of War won't be coming out this year, which I think no one is ever really expecting it to actually come out this year.
No, I don't think that I ever was, but what does it say? Since the release of the next God of War teaser last year, we've been humbled by the amount of love our community has shown us. We're incredibly grateful to see so many people excited to experience the next chapter of Kratos and Atreus' journey. Blah, 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 blah. We've made the decision to shift our release window to 2022. That's a big window.
Yeah.
That's an entire year.
Yep.
Yeah,
yep.
But as you get older, the years get shorter, so it'll be here in 2 seconds. The 2022 will be gone in the blink of an eye by the time we get to it. Also, they confirmed in that post or something that it is a cross-generation game, so it'll be on the PS4 as well as the PS5, which I think is the first time they've properly said that.
Oh, interesting.
That kind of... It's somewhere in there that they're like, oh yeah, it's going to be on the PS4 as well. Which is kind of a shame.
I'm not into. I feel very mixed about it because it's a privileged position to be able to say, like, I just want it to come out on the PS5 and be fully optimized for that and have them not worry about it having to be, not like backwards compatible, but, you know, it be cross-gen. Because, if you're someone that hasn't been able to afford to upgrade your console yet or just hasn't been able to get your hands on one yet, then, it would suck that you have to miss out on these games. But by the same token, I've been in that position before when I was younger where I couldn't afford to upgrade day one. And it is when the games first come out and you feel like you're missing out on them, it's not a great feeling. But when you do finally have that moment where you can afford to go into the shop and get the new console and get the games, it makes it so much more exciting. It gives you something to look forward to. And I kind of feel like if you're, playing these games on the last generation console that you still have, by the time you upgrade to the PS5, you've maybe not given yourself the best experience with the game. I don't know. I sort of can understand the logic for it, and it does make it a bit more accessible for people, but I kind of wish there was a bit more of a line in the sand of just like, nope, we're in the next gen now. especially something like God of War, where the first one was so visually impressive that I feel like they'll be sort of shortchanging themselves a bit by having to develop it in tandem with the last generation. I don't know.
Gran Turismo 7 is the other one that is going to be both generations, which is another weird one. But yeah, I agree. Like,
especially and Horizon, right? We covered that in the State of Play video stuff that we did, which I didn't know. It's another cross-gen one, which, like, Tommy and I just finished Yakuza Like a Dragon, and that had a shitty cross-gen thing of, like, if you buy the PS4 version and you play it a bunch, you can't then transfer your save to the PS5 version. So I just had to play the PS4 version all the way through, and I've got the PS5 version, but having that one foot in both generations has been, like, for some people, good this time. I think, is it, what's the Xbox thing called, where it's just like, bang, you got all the shit there.
Smart delivery.
Yep, smart delivery. Like
that when you stuff get when you get a, you know, when you get something from ASOS and the it shows up, and then the postie's like, hey, guess what? Did you know an ant can carry 40 times its own body weight? I knew that information. Well, see you later.
Wait.
That was a really clever.
You had a postie that actually, like, rang your doorbell and you saw face to face and you had a conversation with?
That has always, like, that genuinely happens to me every day because I live in an apartment building. Anytime I get a delivery, he does ring the doorbell.
Fuck. I missed out on so many deliveries because they don't ring the doorbell and they leave a card. Probably every delivery I've ever had.
Every time they do see you there, though, you come out and you're like, give me a fact. Why don't you give me a fact? I had another post to give me a fact. That was a smart delivery. You're like a fucking PS4, bro. Get out of here.
Very high IQ to be my postie.
Yeah. My IQ is actually the same as my postcode. And I live in... quick, I'm going to Google where 0001 is. Canberra? Yeah, Parliament House? Who knows? Anyway,
Botany
Bay.
I get the worst of both worlds. I get the ringing on the doorbell, and then I go down there and the guy has just already fucked off and just left it on the front of my building anyway. So I'm getting disturbed, I'm having a run out, and I'm getting no trivia, which is probably why I'm so dumb, because the mailman isn't sticking around to give me any facts about albatrosses or whatever.
Every postie I've ever had is like a fantail, where I get like a little fact every time I get a delivery. It's like having my period every day.
This current place, they don't ring the doorbell. I can see them from my patio. They run away, and then they take my parcel to not the nearest post office, but one that I have to drive to, like three post offices away. So I'm really having terrible times with the postie.
You just got a funny postman. I reckon that's all that's happening there. You just got a funny prankster of a postman. You'll see him,
he's
and it'll be
a
like
bit,
Steve-O.
Yeah.
The thing with God of War in particular, it's kind of two ways, because the PS4 version of God of War 2018, whatever you call it now, that was really kind of advanced for the PlayStation 4 at the time, and then got like the 60 FPS upgrade and all of that stuff on the PS5, I believe. I think that's right. Maybe it didn't. I can't remember.
Yeah,
but
a couple of months ago. Yeah.
And it did well with, like, maintaining that one shot thing and like finding a way to make itself work on that hardware. So I'm assuming they'll be able to do similar again for Ragnarok, which is the name of the new one. But it is a shame that, especially with how they had that one shot aesthetic, that would be, you'd assume, really serviced by using a PS5 and the SSD in there and the sort of stuff that a PS5 can do. Yeah. So it is a shame that they can't utilize that at all, because they've got to have this version coming out.
Well, yeah. Well, I think kind of a good example is that single shot thing that really felt like it was pushing the PS4 to its full potential. Would they have been able to do that effect if they had have been developing it in tandem for the PS3? Probably not. So it's probably not even that effect. It's that we're maybe missing out on the effect that they could get out of really trying to push the PS5 as far as it can go. Because, yeah, there's certain things that you're just not going to be able to put in if you've got to also have it running on last generation hardware.
Mm. The one, I suppose, good thing about this set of cross-gen games at the moment is that the effect it's had so far is that every game runs really well on the newer consoles.
Yeah.
So, like, if that's just kind of what's going to happen for another year or two with God of War and with Horizon and with whatever else comes out with Halo and that sort of stuff, that you get the same game but it runs really nicely and is at 4K and whatever, then that's not the worst thing in the world. But it does make it feel at the moment like having a like PS4 Pro or whatever.
Yeah.
Totally. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, because it's also by saying we're delaying this to 2022, it does make you wonder, well, what's the cutoff point where they go, okay, everything is now just going to be... We're leaving the PS4 behind and we're only developing things for the PlayStation. Like, because presumably, I would say it's going to be late 2022 as well, which is by that point 2 years after the PS5 coming out. So to be developing exclusives, quote unquote, for that is still working on last gen, it seems weird to say that we're delaying this, but... so that we can work on it for last gen? I don't know. Because,
I was just going to say, I guess the other thing with this game in particular is you would assume that they've sort of been designing it since they wrapped that first one, which was a couple of years before the PS5 came out. And it seems like everyone got their hands on the PS5 development kits relatively late comparative to most other console launches. So the fact that the game has been designed from the start for a PS4... or to exist on PS4s, maybe. Well, I don't know. It would like I that to me. I guess I'm saying that it suggests it won't be the thing where it'll go. They'll later on say, actually, it's just PS5 now. You know what I mean? Because I was kind of thinking in my head, maybe at some point they'll be like, actually, fuck the PS4. It's been 2 years. But the fact that they've been designing it from the ground up for a PS4 means that that's probably where the scope of the game is at as well. So.
I just think the supply stuff, right? Like, if you're making a game for PlayStation, still the vast, vast majority of the user base is playing on a PS4. Like, you would be throwing away millions of dollars, right, if you didn't release it on a PS4.
Yeah, yeah. So this week I've been reading the book Blood, Sweat and Pixels by Jason Schreier, which he has a new book that I think has just come out, which is about...
Jason Schreck. Yeah. Jason Somebody Schreck, once told me it was Jason Schreck.
Right. So he's written an absolute all-star of a book.
Blood, Swamp, and
there's
Pixels.
There's a new one that's just come out that he's written. There's a new one that he's just written called Press Reset, which is about gaming companies going into ruin. But that coming out reminded me that I never got around to his first book, which is... the sort of behind-the-scenes stories of a lot of different games, and it's fantastic. I'm blazing through it. If you've never read it, I would really recommend it because the first three chapters are about Uncharted 4, Stardew Valley, and what's the first one? Kickstarter game. Anyway... just these really interesting behind-the-scenes stories that
are
really propulsively... No, the one of the really early ones.
The Castlevania one? Bloodstained, maybe?
No, like one of the very, very first ones made by... it is Pillars of Eternity.
Oh, okay. Well, yeah, we never would have. That's the most generic name that a video game's ever had. There's no reason that would ever stick in your head.
Uncharted 4, The Witcher 3, Dragon Age Inquisition, Pillars of Eternity, Stardew Valley, and Shovel Knight are all covered in Blood, Sweat, and Pixels.
Yep. Yeah, so the first three... So Pillars of... I've already forgotten it. That's the first one. It's a company that wants to sort of start making their own stuff, and it's when Kickstarter is very new, so they were like one of the first big games on there. They make like 4 million in the space of like a week or whatever, and then just about being beholden to Kickstarter backers instead of a funding body or a producer or whatever. And then Uncharted 4, big legacy series, and all the kind of behind the scenes turmoil of the director leaving that and all the crunch that they had to go through, and then Stardew Valley, just like one guy working on it for 5 years. So it's all these fascinating stories. It's a lot of the video games mentioned in there are ones I haven't played and have very little interest in. No surprise, given that it took me 15 minutes to remember the title of one of them. even if you're in that position, I would recommend this book because the stories are just so well told and contextualized. But it's interesting, like, being halfway through that book and then seeing this about God of War 2 and realizing that, like, the kinds of things behind the scenes of, like, this reeks of something that Sony is making them do rather than something that they want to do with God of War as a creative decision. And the other thing being that this ultimately pulls resources away from the rest of the game. That's kind of the thing that you realize in reading these stories in this book, is that, like, for every decision that gets put down from on high of, like, hey, we want to do this, that means that people that could be just enhancing it or working on the actual flow of the actual game are now having to devote time to, hey, we've got to also have people making sure that this can run on a PS4. And how that kind of really, you know, that sort of stuff tends to really split teams up.
The original God of War 2, the one on the PS2, came out on the PS2 a fair few months after the PS3 was released. So they've got a history of making impressive games on old hardware. Right. So, you know, it's still at the point, I think, because no company is really going nuts on the next gen exclusives yet. We're kind of in a position where you don't know what you're missing out on, I guess, or it could be that maybe these ones just aren't that much of a leap, and it's just kind of the frame rates and the resolution and stuff that will be the big difference between these generations. Like Ratchet and Clank looks like it's doing some stuff, but really, any of the games that have come out so far that have been exclusives or have been made with these next-gen ones in mind aren't that crazy far ahead of anything on the PS4 or whatever.
That's a good point. I wonder, like, what the difference is. Like, maybe with something like Horizon, they're a good chunk of the way through and they realize, like, oh, you know what? We could just scale these certain bits back and have it come out on both. Whereas something like Ratchet and Clank, where the fast loading time seems to be such an integral part of what that game is doing moment to moment, and they've designed it all around that, where from, you know, from day one, I think their decision has been that this has to be a PS5 exclusive.
I would be more in the realm of Sony have done a deal with them that has said this must be a PS5 exclusive because PS5 needs exclusives. And, you know, because, like, Santa Monica is, it's a first-party studio, right? Like, it's owned by Sony. Like, that's...
I think so, yeah. I think it's called Sony Santa Monica.
Yeah. And then Guerrilla Games is also essentially a first-party studio. Like, the guy who used to run it is now the head of PlayStation Studio. Like, it's very closely tied together. I feel like, you know, these are all conversations that happen at board level, right? Whether it's more about money and incentivizing people to buy consoles, you know, it's that right. kind of balance. I would be, because I think Returnal, it's like, well, it has some good haptic feedback, but that could have run on a PS4, just would have had less good graphics. So I think these games that are coming out within the past 12 months and the next 24 months are games that could have come out on either console, and the decision, like the Demon's Souls remake, it's like, it looked great and it ran great, but you probably could have peeled that back and released it on a PS4. It's just about trying to get people to buy a console or a game.
I think the good thing is at the moment too, in terms of if you're developing these, speaking as an expert in game development, so much of an expert in game development that I didn't even put an N after I said expert. I said expert. So that's the level of... I'm not exactly a postman, but I'm smart. So The thing that does make it slightly easier in terms of the resources thing especially is that, like, the PS4 and the Xbox One and everything since then, they're all relatively similar to developing for a PC anyway. Like, everything's got quite similar components now. All the architecture of all of them is similar. So it makes that, my understanding is, process of developing for multiple platforms easier than it used to be, because you are already having to account if you're making a PC version for multiple different setups and whatever, and you just kind of got a couple of extra ones with these consoles. That's my understanding. It's not simple, but it's definitely not as complicated as it used to be when it was like, we're making this on the PS3 and 4, which are totally different fucking machines, and we're losing our minds, like with Metal Gear Solid 5 and stuff.
Well, yeah, speaking of new hardware, let's get into our 60th week in a row of talking about the Nintendo NX. The Nintendo NXX. We're recording this a day later than we normally do because we thought that maybe news may have dropped by now. There's been new rumor articles popping up every week, it seems like, but especially in the last week, it has reached a real fever pitch. The current speculation is that they want to announce the hardware before E3, which then frees them and third-party developers up to be able to talk about the software running on it, which would make a lot of sense. But that is now a week away, and there's still been nothing. There has been a couple of Amazon, France, and Mexico listings, kind of little placeholder things that popped up.
Best Buy in the US as well had back-end listings for the new Nintendo Switch Pro is what it's being called in all these listings.
Right.
So there's a few, there's a lot of that sort of level of rumor stuff going around, and it does seem pretty inevitable because there were all those Bloomberg things that we've talked about or whatever, like lots and lots of leaks about here's the hardware they've ordered and blah, blah, blah. And then, like, I think you were maybe going to say, but that tweet they put out specifically says, we're focusing on software for our E3 thing, which they announced the dates of, and they I don't remember them saying specifically it's software. So either they know that people are doing the rumors and they're trying to mitigate expectations, or that means that, like you say, the hardware will be probably an hour after this goes up announced.
Genuinely,
I think they usually do say focusing on they'll sometimes say games that are coming out for the rest of this year or something like that. But
I do think they have does. It's just a very pointed sentence at this time in the rumor mill. Yeah.
Yeah. So it seems like either if it's not announced in the next week, then it's never happening. Like if they don't say it before E3, then they just show the software and they're probably not worrying about it for maybe another year because, you would have to assume if it is launching this year, then they're going to show off the games that are on it at E3. Like it all seems to make a lot of sense, but who knows? It just seems like it's been reported on by so many reputable sites who are sort of talking about it in a way of like, no, this is definitely happening. This is a real thing. This isn't just conjecture. Hopefully we find out soon. Hopefully we're here talking about it next week. Because God, if it's not confirmed, we'll just do another little segment of wheel spinning and speculating in a week's time.
Yeah. I think it'll almost definitely be done before E3, just a short 5-minute thing, almost like they did with their... But I guess if it's new hardware, they'll have to explain it if they're just focusing on software. I'm trying to use fucking Twitter to look for what their language has been with past tweets, but it's that you can't search on that fucking website. So whatever. Who knows? Either way, who cares? I'm back in lockdown.
I pretty much think it'll happen Friday this week.
Yeah.
If it's going to happen, it'll probably be Friday.
That's when I tend to do things.
And it's going to happen. So it's going to happen tomorrow. That's my call. It's definitely happening. Yeah. It's definitely happening tomorrow.
Yeah, and I think it's going to be in their what is their current style of like very unceremonious, just like a video embedded in a tweet at four in the morning Melbourne time with no fanfare, no run-up, just a 3-minute small video in a little box on that website.
Thinking about it, I wouldn't be surprised if they did just announce it in this direct and the tweet said software, but it meant nothing. They were just writing a tweet And part of this direct was about the new Nintendo Switch.
Yeah, yeah, it could start with the new Nintendo Switch, and then it's like, well, yeah, everything after that is going to address the new Nintendo Switch, because it was at the start of the presentation. They're not going to not
right,
talk about
yeah,
it.
Like
that do, also could, yeah,
yeah. But I do hope that it's the other way, because I do love the strategy of getting the hardware announcement out of the way. That's done. Everyone knows it exists leading in, and then you're freeing up the presentation to just go boom. Because that's the big thing I've seen too, is that they, for third parties that have stuff for it as well, if their conference is happening before Nintendo's, they need it to be out there so that they can be talking about their stuff running on it.
Right.
That's true.
Yeah, that's a good point.
The Nintendo, it's 40 minutes. And they've got a bunch of games that they want to talk about this year and games that haven't come out yet. 40 minutes is not long enough to also reveal a brand new piece of hardware, I don't think.
Yep.
Yeah, who knows?
Especially if you're going to show off all the effects of HD Rumble Plus that it's presumably got in.
Holy shit. UHD Rumble.
There's 35 minutes right there.
Yes.
OLED
Rumble. We've got to explain to you what 1440p resolution is. Because you've never seen that before. Yeah.
You know how you can feel metal balls in that original controller the one time when you didn't buy 1-2 Switch? Well, guess what? Now we've got a PS5 controller.
Yep, it's launching with 3-4 Switch.
I think by the time we're recording next, it'll be announced and everything. But I don't expect it to be a significant, massive, huge jump or whatever. It's not like it's a next-gen console. This will be a nicer screen, slightly better graphics and that sort of stuff, but it's not going to be a huge deal.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
I think it'll just mean maybe that we can finally see some stuff that they've been sitting on that they want to launch in tandem with this coming out. That's the main reason I'm excited for it to be out there, is to see what they're kind of, you know.
It seems extremely hopeful, but I would love to see Breath of the Wild 2 get released this year.
Yeah, that is extremely hopeful.
So that got teased 2 years ago, 2019.
Yeah. So
when they did the teaser trailer for that. So who knows?
Yeah, maybe. Metroid Prime 4 is still on the table. All sorts of things we'll be seeing at E3, definitely.
Yeah.
So who else has announced E3 shows? Devolver have announced theirs.
I think everyone
Nintendo have
now.
Announced theirs, and is that
Ubisoft? Right. Ubisoft has
Microsoft slash Bethesda have their one happening.
Yep.
I'm pretty sure every show now has its sort of, or every show that you know is happening has its time and everything. Because I don't think EA are doing one themselves this year, but there is like a Battlefield event on the 9th of June.
Yes. EA's thing is in July. It's like July 22nd, it looks like. So it's totally separate from E3, yeah.
There's that PC gaming show, which I still don't really know what it is. The Summer Games Fest stuff, that Jeff Keighley thing.
Yeah.
But yeah, the big ones are still Sony obviously isn't doing it anymore, and they haven't announced any sort of concurrent timed event or whatever.
No, they just did that state of play, so
yeah, but nothing bigger than that for them, which I don't know, it seems sort of strange, because what's their game this year for the rest of the year then? Even there kind of is one, right? They got Ratchet in a week, but then there's that back half of the year is pretty empty from my memory, so unless Horizon does come out this year, which it seems like it won't.
Right. Yeah, you'd think they would have dropped the release date if it was coming out in the next 6 months.
Obviously, I mean, this is the year where all the COVID mess has put everything back by an extra year. So it kind of makes sense. Xbox and Bethesda, that'll be like, you would assume they will kind of go, here's some of the exclusives that Bethesda will be bringing to Xbox in the coming fucking 50 years, because it's Bethesda. Mm-hmm. Skyrim 2. Mm-hmm. You know, it's been as long now between when Skyrim released to now as it was between Morrowind and Skyrim.
Yes, I did know that. That's
coming out. I saw someone posting about that the other day. fucking nuts.
Yeah, because there was another game in between Morrowind and Skyrim.
Yeah, exactly. They put out three. It's the same with like Grand Theft Auto 5. It was forever ago now. So maybe Bethesda will be like, here's the new Wolfenstein or whatever that's coming to Xbox. And you'd assume they'd also show a bunch of Halo at Microsoft's thing.
Yeah.
Maybe Sony will just do a State of Play thing in July or August where they do like a, you know, here's some announcements.
I think Sony's pretty happy to be doing their own thing at this point.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I read a little interview with the head of PlayStation Studios who was like, single-player narrative games are what we're all about. You know, they're not all going to be AAA, you know, like they're not all going to be Uncharted games, but single-player games are still their focus and... I don't know, they're killing it. Like all of their major releases lately have been really, really good. So I have faith in Sony. I'm not worried.
No, totally. However long they want to wait until the next thing is, I'd like to see some new stuff out of them, which is what they like officially cemented Team Asobi, who are the Astrobot people, as being a studio of theirs now. Which I think it had already been sort of done, but they just put the rubber stamp on it or whatever this week. And they are working on, their language was like pretty broad. It was they're developing a franchise for all ages with global appeal. So the ultimate game.
Wow. Wow. Well, I mean, what that says to me is
that's
Astrobot 3D platformer.
That'd be great, you know, right?
Like real game, real franchise, not just a pack-in, not just VR. They've been fucking really good at making them. Out of the two they've made, they're both like 10 out of 10 games, really. I'm excited. I'm keen for what they do next.
That's really funny that they, after making a game that was built into the console, like, you know, came installed on the console, the PS5 when you bought it, that they still at that point weren't formally inked as being like an official Sony studio. Like they still... No, we're not going to give you the stamp quite yet.
Yeah, well, because wasn't it that they were like technically Studio Japan at the time still, and then they dissolved that and made just some of those people Team Asobi? So I think this is like the restructured Studio Japan or whatever.
Right.
I'm pretty sure that's how
I don't know.
That
well,
went.
I won't know about any of that until Jason Schreck writes a book about it. That's the only way. That's the only way I'm capable of finding out about nitty gritty studio business at this point in my life. Speaking of which, not really, but hey, look, you know, we had a big old bitch on this show last week, I believe it was, and the powers that be listened to us. There's a new patch out for Biomutant.
Oh yeah,
gives you the option of telling the narrator to fuck off, and when he gets there, fuck off again. So you have to assume that we weren't alone in our gripe with this game.
It seems to be the case that it was pretty much everybody who had the exact same problems with that game as we did.
Yeah, so even people who enjoyed the game did not enjoy the gibberish. And then the narrator thing, the fact that the narrator is... like, I was watching a video the other night where they said the same sort of thing that I think it was you said, Nox, of like having a narrator describe dialogue that's meant to be happening with you, to you, puts you at a remove from the story. Like, you don't feel immersed in the game. You don't even feel like the story is happening to your character. It's just being told to you.
Yep, that is exactly what I thought as well. But yeah, good on them for taking the feedback, I guess. It's crazy to have that many years of development and not have this be flagged as an issue before then. Like the stuff that they are fixing in this patch, and good for them, and it all seems like stuff they need to fix, but like how the fuck did you not know about this? Like it really seems bizarre to me.
Well, again, not to keep referring back to this book that all the pages of my copy are currently stuck together, by the way I'm going on about it, but there's a whole chapter on Diablo 3 and that launching and them having to like completely overhaul that, because I think it is, you know, you see it a lot where people work on something too much and they're, you know, you can't be objective anymore. Like the things that immediately stick out to someone else as being a bothersome component to it. Like you've lost the ability to see it that way because you thought it was a cool idea and then, you know, you're excited to see it come together. So, yeah, I mean, you can't always get it right day one, but good for them for, you know, not being too proud to listen to people and go, okay, people are hating this. We got to
It's like when you meet someone else's kids and straight away you're like, this little shit's a fuckhead. And the parents are always like, he just, you know, he's speaking gibberish now, but, you know, it'll be cool. I'll tell you what he meant later on. He doesn't need to learn.
Well, yeah.
I'm happy to just have it be gibberish. You don't need to tell me what he's saying. It's a kid.
Yeah,
right?
Exactly. I'll enjoy it. If the kid's not able to speak, then fine. But it seems as though he's choosing to do it this way, which is a fucking weird choice.
I have to assume that all throughout development, they were like, we can't afford more than one voice actor. So we're going to use one voice actor. And this is a fun way to get around it. And at no point did they think this is, and maybe someone did think this is an annoying way to do it. But, you know, it's the kind of thing where like people just asked for the ability to turn it off or to skip the gibberish or to just have subtitles. And when you're in that development mindset, you probably don't want to be like, well, we can't just turn it off. We recorded all these lines. We've programmed all this stuff. But people just wanted it turned off.
Returnal not having like a temporary save or whatever as well, where they're like, no, this is our vision. But like, and that's the thing with this patch as well, is that it addresses the specific timing of things and like the volume and whatever. But the core of the writing is still a big issue with that game because of the way that it's written in this strange second person perspective. So, you know, that it doesn't fix any of the more fundamental stuff. But yeah, good for them.
Yeah.
But, you know, we were all pretty, you know, we're all relatively positive on the visuals and the exploration side of things. So if you were slightly swayed by our negative opinion of the narrator when we talked about it last week, then maybe this is a reason to potentially reconsider it and maybe give it a look. Especially if you're in lockdown or something and you're looking for something extra to play, if you've burned through a lot of other stuff.
If you were looking for something pretty fucking extra to play in lockdown, maybe you'd do something like me and sign up for Final Fantasy 14 online.
It's been revealed that I'm somewhat like you, Nox, because I did the exact thing about 3 days ago. Downloaded it. I guess I had jumped on a free. Was it free at some point? Maybe.
So it's gone back and forth. It's complicated and confusing because this game's been around for ages in a lot of different kind of forms. But at the moment, it is free to play up until you get to a certain level or a certain part of the story, and then it asks you, okay, if you want to keep going, you got to buy it now, and then you got to pay us monthly.
Right. Okay. Because, I had it already in my library. I got the PS5 version. Signed up, made a character, all that shit. All of that stuff was fun. And I was reminded of the legacy of this game, or the, you know, how it originally... What did they do? They canned the whole thing and did it again?
Yeah. So it was a PS3 game originally, and it fucking sucked, apparently. To the point where they were like, okay, we'll redo it. And they made Final Fantasy 14 A Realm Reborn, which is what the current base version of this is. But the story carries on from that original version. So the opening cinematic is like, well, in the old days, the entire world fucking blew up when we deleted the servers. So now you're in a new world, and remember those wonderful heroes who lived in that fucked up place.
Yep. Yeah. I was really excited going into the character creation and the world choosing and all that shit, because it has a lot of Final Fantasy stuff. It has great music. It has okay writing, but interesting world building. That's always sort of the case. Like good characters and good like strong visual design, I guess, like evocative design. And then I was dropped into the world and was like, oh, this feels like an old game, because it's sort of like Mass Effect 1 for me, where like the textures are high resolution and everything's very clear and you know, and all that stuff. But all that means is you can see like the lack of detail in the world. It's not very, you know, filled in with bits and pieces, which when you've been playing, I guess a Returnal or something like that, is quite stark. But you, I assume, played it a bit more than me, because I just like played the tutorial essentially.
Well, the tutorial is kind of hours long as well. This is straight up an MMO, which is a massively multiplayer online game. If you don't have a postman like mine who's told you these sorts of things, and it means that this is the same game, the content you're doing at the start at least, that was out in like 2014. So it is an old game.
Right.
The expansions that have been added onto it, those are the things that people seem to really, really like. Those are the bits where they're like, this game is actually great now, but from everything I've been informed about this game on, people have told me, people talk Final Fantasy, okay, so I don't think you're getting away with it. People talk about what's going on. But like, it takes a while for it to really get like the story to get as interesting as it does, and the places to get as interesting as they apparently do. So yes, in that early part, it is very much like an olden days MMO where it's, hey, go kill 5 ladybugs, please. They're living out just outside the city gates. And pretty dull sort of things that you're doing. But I'm kind of sticking with it for a bit because it's very simple and straightforward, which is kind of, you know, soothing. And I do really like the Final Fantasy kind of trappings of it.
Yeah.
The music and the visuals. The visuals are old, but they're nice. And I'm interested to see whether or not this can get to... I want to see if I can get to that point where it starts getting really good before I get bored of it. Which I'm not yet. Right. I am kind of enjoying it and willing to do that for a bit.
I got fully sucked into The Elder Scrolls Online about a year ago, last major lockdown. Mm. And I think maybe I found it easier to accept its shortcomings because it just looked like Morrowind. Like, that's where you start, that's where you play. Right. And I loved Morrowind. It doesn't look like a hugely upscaled, up-resed version of it. It still kind of looks a bit old-fashioned, but... running around doing fetch quests and stuff in Morrowind, it scratched an itch for me that maybe is very subjective.
Yeah, well, I'm getting that itch scratched by looking at a bunch of chocobos right at the moment.
Right.
See those fucking things squawking around?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Big yellow fucks. They're great. That's the noise. And they're doing that. I'm holding potions. I bet I'll see a phoenix down at some point.
Big bird looking ass,
motherfucker. Yeah. Hey, where's fucking Snuffleupagus, you cunt? Give me the directions.
Yes.
You know, where do you go to get to whatever it's called? To Arkhamurk Street. All those words are fucking annoying. The learning a new fantasy world is one of the most arduous things you can be asked to do at any point. It's like the line between, hey, we've got a fully realized world and it's immersive, so everybody in this world is talking as though they live in it. And they're all like, of course they wouldn't describe what a Glimberglore is to you. But having to figure out what the fuck a Glimberglore is every time and which part of the world is the Garborgian Empire, like, just...
Yeah.
But I will say, as arduous as you find it to learn about a new one of those worlds, I think it must be even more arduous to be the person creating one of those new fantasy worlds. Because it's like, they're all the same, but we've got to make our one, we've got to come up with new names for all this stuff when it's like, people know what it is. It's just fantasy bullshit.
You download a PDF of the Wheel of Time and you go through and replace every noun with a keyboard mash. And then you're done. Yep. You've written up a world.
Well, I think that's why it's arduous, right? It's like, how do you make it good? Because there are maybe, and it's again, it's nostalgia, but like Final Fantasy IX works for me. It's a little silly, but that was a pretty fun, cohesive world that I didn't get annoyed by, right? Like, that's the thing. I'm a little annoyed by Final Fantasy XIV's one, but they need to lean harder on the Final Fantasy-isms. Where's the Phoenix down?
And I think that's the bit that's getting me into it is like you see a Moogle every now and again and you're like, okay, I know where I am sort of, and I'll figure out what the evil Hakpakar are. They're putting some fucking apostrophes in there, like, all right, go for it, man. But like there's enough of it, and that's why World of Warcraft worked, because enough people knew, like, okay, I kind of know these games. I played 2 in the 90s. I know yep. what an orc is. I read Lord of the Rings.
I know where Azeroth is. I know Lordaeron. And, right. All that shit. Yeah.
And so that's, I think, why stuff like Asheron's Call and whatever never quite hit. Guild Wars, because it's completely right. separate. And that's right. why The Matrix Online was the most successful MMO of all time. So I don't know what my point is. But yeah, I am finding that particular element of it like a little... it's the same with any MMO as well, because you get there's so many things to do. There's so many things on the fucking screen. There's so many different systems you're learning about. But it's a nice enough looking place, and I'm interested to see more of it. And the fact that it's free for as long as it is, it really helps to, you know, with your decision making there. So yeah, I don't know. I'm gonna keep going with it.
What do we got? We've got other E3 stuff, any new stuff? I know Crysis, the trilogy is being remastered and released in soon, a few months or something, this fall. So later this year.
Yeah, well, because they already did one, right?
Did they?
They already did. The first one already came out as a remaster ages ago, so it's just 2 and 3 that are like the new thing there.
Right, okay. That's a nice little package.
Yeah. But
there's a little package. I've been.
God.
What you been playing with over there, Tommy?
I've been playing Beat Saber. There was an update for Beat Saber about a week ago. The Interscope Music Pack, which kind of they just announced and dropped within the space of about 24 hours. Interscope, the famous record label, got I would guess hundreds of artists on their books. They've released probably thousands of songs that have topped the charts, and they've brought out this music pack for Beat Saber that has 6 songs on it. They're six good songs, don't get me wrong, but Beat Saber is a great game. It's one of my favorites. Ben, I know you're a big fan of it.
Yep.
I know a lot of people that listen to this are really into it. And the stuff that is built into it is pretty fun, but it's very like techno ravey. And then they have done a couple of music packs in the past. And this is the thing: whoever is the what would you call it? The soundtrack coordinator for this game seems to have the most bizarre taste, because you can get a Green Day pack, you can get a Linkin Park pack,
yep,
you can get a BTS pack, and then now you can get an Interscope Records pack, which has.
Yeah, this is
a Kendrick Lamar song. It has a Gwen Stefani song.
Yep.
It has a Limp Bizkit song. It has LMFAO.
Pussycat Dolls, Maroon 5 and One Republic.
Pussycat Dolls and Maroon 5 and One Republic.
Fucking weird mix.
So, look,
weird mix of songs. Like, they're cool all hugely popular, but...
It's cool to have new songs on there. At all, like it. I just kind of wanted some new stuff to play on there, and I downloaded the BTS pack. I'd never really listened to any BTS, but as it turns out, playing through songs on Beat Saber is a really good way to actually get yourself into the music. I've now been running while listening to BTS. I now legitimately like BTS and think that Nick Cody should kill himself.
What's the quickest way to explain that? Go listen to...
He made fun of BTS and the army came a-marching.
Yeah.
Yeah, he made fun of him on a TV show over here. And
That's right, it was a TV show.
A lot of heat on social media.
Yep.
Yeah. But yeah,
I like this programming decision here of like, if they made every one of their song packs, like, we're gonna put... song packs out that where every time the theme is you're looking in the glove box of a car that is shared between an older brother and younger sister that they both drive.
Right. Yeah.
That should be it every single time.
Yeah.
There's Gwen Stefani, Pussycat Dolls, Kendrick Lamar and Limp Bizkit. Like, that's sick.
Limp Bizkit. Yeah.
Yeah.
But it's so strange because they bring these packs out so sporadically too. So there's no like some of them are like, they did like a Rocket League soundtrack crossover, and then they've done a Green Day one. It's just really hard to work out like who is. There's no cohesiveness with the songs that are available on there, which would be fine if there were lots and lots of them under each genre. But as it is, there's just like if you're a rockhead, you're basically limited to Green Day, and if you like pop, you basically can get this Gwen Stefani and Pussycat Dolls, and that's it. I wish they were going a bit more hell for leather, and even getting into Scope on board is great, but to have this pack from this company that's got a huge catalog and just have six songs in there, it's a little frustrating. Like,
it's my biggest problem with that game, because I've been playing a little bit of Beat Saber and I'm not super into it because of the music selection, but where I bought the Linkin Park pack because I'll always be 12 in my heart.
Yep.
So it makes anyone who's been with me a pretty weird fucking person. But the fact that you can't buy individual songs, or that there isn't some sort of subscription service with a bunch of songs.
You can buy individual songs, yeah.
Yeah, right. I've just seen these fucking packs, but I don't really give a shit about any of this. Like you're saying,
they're a little expensive. The packs are so much more value.
Right.
It makes sense to get them. But yeah, I'm looking through the list. Yeah. There's an Imagine Dragons one, which just blech. I like the original soundtrack of Beat Saber. I like those original songs that were in the first three or four packs. They just fit what I'm there for. I don't like that kind of music. I don't listen to dubstep or techno, but or electro anymore. But
it works for the game,
And then there's
especially
that
if you play
one,
through the campaign,
super,
they kind of
like,
grow on you because you end up playing a lot.
Yeah, totally. There's extreme rapid techno stuff in there, which is good for a challenge, but is not fun to listen to. Yeah, I've been playing a lot of Fuser again, just because I've just been sitting around.
Oh yeah.
Doing nothing in lockdown, and it's fucking fun to make mashups, and that has a great mix of music. Fuser has a really fun mix of pop and R&B and hip hop and dance, and the fact that there's a shit ton of songs and you can unlock them just by
it's got an incredible
getting
mix,
points in the game. I reckon they nailed it with Fuser. Beat Saber, I like the game more than the music. I like it as a fitness thing to do.
Yeah, same.
Yeah.
I really hope they start churning out more songs on there, because I had mine. I did I forget what it's called, the home, the what's the, is it side door? No,
side loading.
The thing that you
side
put
quest.
On your, yes, I did the thing that where you hack it and then you can put customized songs that people have made onto it, and I found some good ones, but it just was so much trial and error, because a lot of them feel slightly off because of the fact that they're homemade. They don't quite feel like how you would want them to. And the other big problem is because they've been made by people that are real super, super fans of the game, a lot of the songs that you find that you'd want to get, the people making them have only bothered to make them on expert mode because they've cleared the whole game on that and they just want at the hardest level. So you can't get a song that you want to play just on normal difficulty if you're not insanely skilled person at it. And also, when I got this update, I had to uninstall Beat Saber to get the update to install the Interscope pack, because it wouldn't update otherwise because I had it hacked, right? So
The latest updates as well have removed the ability to do that sideloading stuff. So you can't do the custom songs anymore.
Yeah.
You can downgrade it to an older version.
So
but
I got...
Yeah, that was very similar to my experience with playing that version of Guitar Hero that was on the PC, Clone Hero, that had a similar thing where it was custom songs that were made. But it obviously, it's not up to the same sort of standard as the official ones. But... I don't know. There's just, it's a shame that, because with Guitar Hero as well, I did enjoy playing kind of any song, but when it's a song that you like, it really does improve it for me at least. So, it's a shame there isn't a wider selection in this game, because it has meant that I'm just not putting that much time into it.
Yeah. I think maybe it's just a licensing, money thing. I think Beat Saber doesn't have the ubiquity of of a Guitar Hero or whatever, because it is on a device that, not that many people have. So, it would be great if it got to the point where they could just splash out and go, hey, here's a pack with the top, 40 songs of the last decade or whatever. Would be fantastic. But, I still, the BTS pack it's fun to play. I have been getting these packs of songs that I'm perhaps not as interested in, just because I want new stuff to play on there, because especially in lockdown. It's fun way of getting exercise, and I just love the gameplay of it so much. It's so much fun to actually just play. So, yeah, that's it. That's what's happening in lockdown, baby. I've finished.
That's it.
I've finished Yakuza. And now I have nothing left. That's all there is for me at the moment. Playing BTS songs.
Yeah, I also finished Yakuza. But yeah, maybe we talk about that in a bonus or something. But yeah, I don't know. There's not much else left to cover this week. E3's coming up, but I feel like we've talked about all the little drops that have happened beforehand. Maybe we get a Switch Pro tomorrow, but we don't know yet.
Yep.
I would assume that, either tomorrow or within the next week. But it's probably going to be tomorrow, right? Am I that delayed now? I think I've gotten really delayed or something at the back end here.
My internet has been a fucking shit show for this entire thing.
Yeah, so, I think it's been Tommy. I think we've been okay, Knox, but it's hard to tell when.
Let's delete him from this call. Let's block him.
All right,
guys. Let's wrap it up for another week. Filthycasuals.com.au for the links to our social stuff. We've got the Patreon where you can get a bonus episode every week. We've got the Let's Plays that are on YouTube. Go check all them out. We've got the premium episodes on Bandcamp. We put one up recently of the Metal Gear Solid series. There was one before that on Resident Evil. So if you're looking for extra stuff to listen to, you can go and check those out. Thank you for listening. We'll see you next time. And as we say here at the end of every episode of Filthy Casuals,
Adam Knox as well. Thank you for having me, guys. I hope my delay isn't too bad. Oh, the postman. Did you hear that call?
Yes.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince, they exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.